boys.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
All right, back to your phones, as promised on a reentry Monday. Matt in Boston on the Pats. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What do you got?
Real quick, I just wanted to get you guys' take on two things. One, Tom Brady, I don't understand why you guys specifically feel he owes you guys anything like to be at these voluntary workouts. Like, if I work for a company, if they ask me to be somewhere and it's voluntary, I don't have to go. You know what I mean? And the older you get, you know, you don't have to do more. You think Tom Brady has to buy into any system that they have going in Gillette Stadium? Like, he is Tom Brady.
Let me answer your first one. He doesn't owe me a thing, but I'm a commentator, and I'm commentating and giving you my opinion on the situation. All right? He doesn't owe me squat, but this is my job, okay? This is what's happening. These are my opinions. Sorry you don't like it. All right? And the thing about he doesn't have to be there because it's voluntary, so he shouldn't have shown up last year. He shouldn't have shown up the year before. He was wrong to attend every practice, Matt, the last 4 years.
No. I totally understand. Change, it's out of nowhere. It's not, and it comes without any, told you guys, like, you know, hey, we're I'm not coming this year. But that doesn't matter, though. Like, he's doing other things. Like, he's going to retire, if not, you know, next year, the year after. Like, you know, he has other things that he wants to do.
Okay, neat. I don't care about his other things. I care about the team. What's your second point?
And the second point is, you know, LeBron James this offseason, you know, he's not going to go to Philly because of the whole ownership and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't want to deal with any of that drama. The only place, because I don't think he's going to leave the East, because he is the East. He's the king of the East, right? Why wouldn't he go to Boston? Do you think Danny Ainge would take a chance and trade some, you know, top?
They would have to trade Kyrie. Okay, LeBron's a free agent, so you can keep them all and still sign them if they can carve out the cap room. But they got to carve out the cap. I find this totally unrealistic, but just address it. Let me just ask you this. They'd have to trade a max guy to bring in a max guy. Let's just make it simple. And I'm sure there's more permutations to it, Jimmy, but we can do that on our own time. They got to trade one of their max guys to bring in LeBron as a free agent. So would you trade Kyrie to bring in LeBron James?
No. And look, I'll give you the first of all, Kyrie and LeBron.
Would you trade Horford to bring in LeBron?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but now see, LeBron's not, and Kyrie hate each other, so they're not going to play together.
Right, so my answer to that is still no. It's not a Horford for LeBron thing.
Really?
Well, so let me rephrase. Horford, I would. Horford's older. So Horford, I would.
Gordon Hayward?
No.
Yes!
No.
Sorry, yes.
No, I'm not doing it. No.
I still have Tatum and Brown, right?
Okay, but again,
I mean, that's still the future.
But I don't think you get LeBron and Kyrie in the same place.
No, that's what I'm saying. So fine. If it means dealing one of your max guys to clear the cap room, Kyrie, Horford, or Hayward, would you do it to bring in LeBron?
No.
You know what? I want to trade anyone because I want to see Celtics fans turn into pretzels.
Yes,
about this.
Get LeBron
here. I want that more than anything in the world right now. Actually.
I say no. And the only reason I say no is because I like the window the way it is. And I think Kyrie with the current group gives you a longer window than LeBron would.
If I'm still keeping Tatum and Brown, then I'm swapping out those other three because Tatum and Brown are really the 10-year plan.
They're the building blocks. And again, you would turn so many people into pretzels and you'd likely win a title with him here in the next couple of years. So yeah, let's do it for fun.
Yeah, but Kyrie, what's the age difference with him and LeBron? 7 years?
Yes, it is. But Kyrie,
so that's a big one.
I don't trust Kyrie's knees.
Oh, I'm sticking the way I am. I would rather have what they have, Kyrie, Tatum, Brown, Hayward, than lose Kyrie and have LeBron here. That thing might, you'll win. But it'll last 2 or 3 years tops.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know. I mean,
if you still have Tatum and Brown, it'll last 2 or 3 years tops.
Exactly.
Because I think you can keep Kyrie for 8, 10.
And the young kids get to learn how to win under LeBron. Bring LeBron to Boston.
No,
let's
you don't.
Go.
No, you don't. You sell your soul for LeBron.
Yeah, good. Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. Uh-huh. Every time.
Nope,
it's the best
I'm not
player
doing
in the league.
Where do I sign?
I'm not doing it.
Where do I sign up for this idea?
5 years ago, I'm in. 5 years ago, I'm in. Not now. Not when he's 33, 34 years old, and all of a sudden the miles start piling up, and now you know this is the guy that wants to go play on the wing and not handle the ball anymore.
That's going
to
be such an issue with today's training methods. Please.
I'm just telling you.
I'll take 3 years of LeBron James over 7 years of questioning Kyrie Irving's knee injury.
I won't.
That's really the equation.
I won't.
But it's not happening, so let's just,
Oh, I think
the sports radio
it would
show,
make people.
We do these things.
It'd be great.
Oh, it'd be the best.
Oh, it's just the ultimate.
I just want it on the record.
I mean, Houston is probably going to have to trade James Harden if they want LeBron James.
I just want it on the record that I am not choosing my side out of anything other than age. That's it. I get no issue with LeBron. It would take his talent in a minute.
We've got Cam and Taunton on the Pats. Hi, Cam.
Mike, you hit the nail on the head. That Warriors team is so unlikable, aren't they?
I hate them. I've grown to hate them. They're a bunch of front runners. Like, what is that? You know, so, I don't know. It's just, I don't feel like there's anything. So, Durant does nothing for me. I have no respect for him. None. He goes there to get his rings. And now Steph Curry is sort of playing under the sort of the protective umbrella of Durant. It's like both can screw off. Both can, no pressure. There's no pressure on either of those guys. And the coach, on top of it all, like, you're a factor, you dink. You're a zero sum. I'm growing to hate that whole operation, Cam.
Right, and Draymond Green thinks he's never committed a foul in his life. So, I just want to say, like, I told you on Friday, I think the Patriots are going to go 10-6 this year, and I want to tell you why. A, I think this roster has downgraded across the board. I mean, tell me one position that they've gotten better at this offseason. They haven't. Maybe D-line, maybe, but not by much. Their linebacking crew hasn't improved. Their secondary got worse. Their O-line got worse. Their receiving group got worse. And their running backs got worse. I don't know why. I have people tell me that they're actually better this year than they were last year. The coach and the quarterback can't stand the sight of each other.
Let me ask you this, Cam. Let me ask you this. Is Tom Brady going to be better or worse next year than he was last year?
He's going to be worse. And look, I'm on Brady's side, but I've never once said that him skipping OTAs is going to help him. I just think Bill was petty first, and Brady's returning the favor.
But, I mean, you raise a good point. I mean, Brady won the MVP last year, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, I love how we don't care to the point where I have to ask that, and we still have to think about it. Did he win it?
Yeah, he did.
Like, it doesn't matter to us here, which is awesome. But, so for him to be the exact same, he's got to win the MVP again. So, I mean, let's say he played at a level of 95 out of 100 last year. If he goes to 92, that's not better. All right, so I'm just saying, it's going to be hard for him to be as good as he was last year, the last couple. It's going to be hard. Again, bet against him. I'm not predicting, I'm just saying, it's going to be hard for him to be at the exact same level.
I like that this is what you're doing right now is setting the bar 3 months early, telling Patriots fans, we're going to bash Brady no matter what. Just know it.
Well, no. If you get back to the if you're hosting the AFC title game, you get back to the Super Bowl, then fine, you've won. But not until that point. But anyway, all I'm saying is,
he raised a good point.
Are they better or worse than last year?
Right now, I'd say they're about the same, maybe even a little worse. Like the defensive line, he raises a good point. The defensive line might be better, right? Claiborne's in there,
and so should linebacker if Hightower's healthy.
Okay, but like,
I mean, that's a big one.
Yeah,
it is a big one.
Are you getting 16 games out of him? Probably
see that,
not.
I'm with Murray on that. Like, how can you guarantee his health? Like, so, and
what's the rest of the depth there?
I worry about the secondary a little bit now. Like, you know, I want to see how that one shakes out.
Oh, some Patriots fans will tell you that the McCourty brother's better than Malcolm Butler.
Oh, yeah, no. All of a sudden, Jason McCourty is the second coming of Darrell Revis in his prime.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Like, Pro Football Focus had McCourty ranked higher than Malcolm Butler.
Terrific. Excellent. I'm happy to hear that. So I watched Malcolm Butler. I know he can work in this system. So let's see how that shakes out before we all of a sudden go declaring that some sort of major success. Because I'm not convinced of that. The defense, to me, is going to be something to watch. And so do I think they can overcome the loss of some of the other people? You know, like the offensive line is going to be a work in progress. Amendola is a big loss. But overall, the offense with Brady, assuming the health of Gronk and Edelman, I feel pretty good about. They'll be okay on offense as always. But the other side of it, if there's a slippage on offense, then, you know, they're going to have some challenges.
Bob in Southbridge. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Just give me a minute real quick. I haven't called in a while. Tony, I just want to give my condolences to you and your family, your loss this past year. But getting back to this fraud, Tom Brady, I mean, he sneaks up the back stairs to talk to Robert Kraft to make sure they get rid of Jimmy G. So now Bill Belichick has no leverage, none. What does he decide to do after they get rid of Jimmy G? He decides he's going to skip OTAs, and he's going to go ride camels in Monaco, you know, because he's Tom Brady, and there's nothing they can do to them. How about the other players? They got personal trainers. Do they have the right to have them on the field? Or how about the close like Edelman and Gronkowski? If they need something done, why don't they just go to Tom? Why go to Bill? Go to Tom. He'll go talk to Robert, and they'll fix the things up. What a mess. You were spot on, Mike. This team will be worse, you guarantee it. They're going to win the East because the East sucks. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't see them in the AFC Championship game this year. Tom is not focused. I think this is, could be one of the most... this all falls back on Tom Brady, period. Yes, he's won us all these Super Bowls, this and that, but he cut the knees off of Bill Belichick and all these other players.
Well, Bob, I'm just going to cut you off there. He cut the knees out from Bill... Well, Kraft really cut the knees out from underneath Bill Belichick. That's the fact. I mean, Brady's just looking out for his own interest in being a player. It's up to the owner to stay out of the way and let the coach run his own program. So Kraft wouldn't let that happen, and so Kraft is the one that undercut Bill.
Yes, and Tom has gone along with it.
Of course. Well, I mean, yes, Tom did it, but Kraft let it happen. Does Bill respond this week? Does he make Brady play with the twos? Does he have a snide comment or two? So it's tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. There's media all 3 days. Bill is set to speak to the media all 3 days. All 3 days. Which is, I hope every day he's asked the same question just so he can snort into the microphone. But let's ask the question. He has 3 days to slide just a little backhand under the radar comment. Is he going to do that? Is he going to do something on the field? Any response this week?
I doubt it. I doubt it, and I'll tell you why. Because I think Bill wants it over. I think that there is an understanding with Robert that when Tom shows up, it'll be over. And the thing that you read from Howe, right, that it's unclear how Belichick feels about this.
Laughable.
Tells me that Belichick's camp is saying to people publicly, Bill has made no public judgment on Tom's absence, by the way. So don't go saying that he has. He's made no public judgment on Tom's absence. Like, that is the message that is being sent to the people who cover the team. Bill hasn't said that. We haven't said that.
So look, it is so easy for them to put on a happy face and just play act. Play act. Can Bill come out and say something nice about Tom? Tom, do a press availability. Say something nice about Bill. Talk to each other on the field while the cameras are there. They're there for 15 minutes or 20 minutes a day. Go up and talk to each other during that time. Let everyone take the picture. Then in your press availability, say, I never had a problem with Tom being, you know, like, just say it, whether you mean it or not. And I'm stunned to this point. Stunned. I've been wrong. Because I told you at the Super Bowl, they were going to have a big kumbaya, come to Jesus, come together moment early in the offseason. I'm stunned it hasn't happened yet. But you know how easy it is for them to craft that narrative starting tomorrow?
Do you think Bill's actually going to stand in front of a mic and say, I don't have a problem with Tom?
All I'm saying is,
no.
If they want to end it,
they could easily do that.
Oh my God.
Just lie.
5 minutes of play acting. Less. 90 seconds of play acting. Go shake his hand in the stretch line while the cameras are there and let everyone snap the picture of Bill and Brady shaking hands.
So that you might get.
Like, how hard is that, guys?
Okay, that you may get. Bill standing in front of a mic and saying, hey, look, you never heard me say I had a problem with it. I'd be shocked if Belichick said that.
And I'm saying if we don't get it, then, I mean, because it's just so easy. It's so easy to put on that happy face and fake it. And the fact they haven't done it yet to me is mind-blowing. So does it come this week? It should. It should come this week.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It'll be 1-2 one more time. There goes Bradley. This one, hit a ton, deep right field. Forget it. The Red Sox are in front. Eighth home run of the year for Benintendi, and it gives Boston the lead.
All right, that was a big home run for the weekend. Benintendi's home run on Saturday night that broke open that game gave the Red Sox a win over the Astros. Maybe the biggest hit of the weekend, if you ask me.
Sorry, Mess.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. You want to set me up? Okay, team me up.
How do you feel about Andrew Benintendi?
Okay, so look, he's hot.
Can I read your email?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go ahead, read it.
You don't have to because the emails are, you know, technically off the record.
No, read it.
But it was so good.
What I said off the record is why, but what I feel on the record.
Okay.
But so read it.
Well, I mean, sometimes we want to phrase it differently.
No need.
Okay.
I think the email pretty much cuts to the heart of it.
Here's what Maz wrote. Well, Benintendi, who's now starting to rip it, completely light it up.
He's got 8 home runs in his last 24 games. Even I can do that math. That's one a series.
And win you games and become a real factor. Maz writes, why do I dislike Benintendi even when he plays well? Feels like a cocky little piece of crap to me. he used the S word. Feels like a cocky little S word to me.
Am I wrong? What does he feel? So here's where I'm at with Benintendi. Okay? He's got ability. There's no two ways about it. And if he, to me, judging him as a player, purely as a player now, always came down to one thing and one thing only, power. If he could, he can hit. There's no two ways about it. He can hit 300 in the big leagues or something close to it. And he's a good outfielder. He's a good athlete, all of that. So if he hits the ball out of the ballpark, and the last two, the one on Saturday and the one last night, because the one last night was in the second deck also.
His swing is butter.
It is. Yes. It's sweet. No. He's got ability. No two ways about it. And the home run he hit off of Harris that ultimately won them the game on Saturday night might have been the biggest hit of the year up to now.
I was just going
to
say, one of the biggest hits of the year for the team.
It was crushed. Absolutely, positively destroyed. And so I'm not taking any of that away. I'm just saying, and I'll be as candid as possible, I don't like him. I don't like him. It doesn't feel to me like he is a likable player. He's got a little bit of that Bryce Harper, I'm too cool for school kind of thing going that bugs the crap out of me. And maybe that makes him good for talk radio. Maybe that makes him, interesting in a lot of different ways. And I think he is. But I look at him and I think, what have you done yet? What allows you to act the way you act? Like, the whole body language on that guy just oozes cocky dink to me. It just oozes cocky little dink. And so whenever there's an opportunity, the base running drives me bananas, because a guy of his ability should be a better base runner than he is. And then on top of it, that ball in the left field corner last night bugged the crap out of me too. And it was at the start
the one that hit the foul line?
Yeah, exactly. Who hit that? Gurriel, Jimmy? Was he the one? Hit the ball down in the left field corner. Benintendi ran into that corner to make the play.
It was foul, don't you think?
I thought it was fair. I thought it hit the line. But that aside, what bugged me about it is Benintendi should have some experience of going into a corner like that. That corner's not terribly different than Fenway.
He started to pussyfoot it into the... He's become a little more cautious out there. Pussyfoot. Remember the catch he had in Tampa as a rookie?
Yes. He was half bent over the wall when he caught the thing.
He goes flying into that picnic area. Yes. Brilliant catch, reckless. Now I feel like he's sort of mamby-pamby out there.
Okay, so again, I don't know why, but on that play, he definitely eased up going into the corner, and the left field corner in that ballpark, not terribly different than Fenway Park. The sidewall's not quite as high, but same idea, you're running into a closed corner. Okay, and so he did. He eased up. Ball hit the line. He then, to me, sort of took his time throwing the ball in, but whatever, got it in. Didn't cost him an extra base or anything of the like. But then he's out there sort of arguing with the umpire. And I'm thinking, just make the play. Shut up. The ball hit the line, I thought. And so instead of arguing with the umpire, because what I think he was really agitated was about is maybe he didn't think the ball was going to be in play, and ultimately it landed fair, and maybe he thought he looked like a jackass on top of it. So I respect his ability. I'm finding him to be a hard player to like.
Okay, so there's...
I don't know any other way to say it.
There's the Benintendi thought. Back to your phones. Here's Josh in Lexington. What do you got, Josh, on the Sox?
Hey, guys. Yeah, they were talking a lot last night about Mitch Moreland, and I had forgotten about his broken toe last year, which they reminded me of. Because at first I was really bummed that they got rid of Hanley, and I thought, how are they going to counter Mitch Moreland? But he keeps raking, and I forgot, the broken toe is not nothing, especially in baseball. I think he's going to keep it up the rest of the year, and I'm a lot more confident about it. I want to get your guys' thoughts.
Your thoughts on Moreland, Mass?
I am not at all buying on Mitch Moreland. Now, look, up to now, he's been phenomenal. Really, again, off the charts, those 2 home runs he hit in Houston. The first one hit, just to the left of the logo there in center field. It was an absolute smash. The one last night landed in that Budweiser section just to the right of dead center. And that's not an easy ballpark to hit him out to that part of the ballpark. And those balls were crushed. They were absolutely crushed. But is he really a 1,000 OPS player? Because that's what he is right now.
No, but I think he could be a 900 OPS player.
Okay, but his career OPS is 760. Seven, and that includes this season when he's been off the charts.
What was he last year for the Red Sox?
769. 22 homers, 79 RBI. The year before, he was 720. So if you want to tell me he's a...
Huh. It feels, boy, 2070 only get you a 7-something OPS?
Right, because he hit 246. The year before, he hit 233. So there's a lot of outs in there. A lot of strikeouts. Now, this year, feels like the strikeouts are down. I mean, I have the numbers right in front of me here. Last year, we struck out 120 times. The year before, was 118. This year, so far, 33. So that feels a little bit lower. I know maybe the rate's the same, but it's just maybe it's based on games played. But he's hitting 305. Is Mitch Moreland really going to hit 305?
No, but I'll tell you, I feel the same way the day they made the move. Any team without Hanley Ramirez has a better chance for long-term success. That's all. I think it's addition by subtraction.
I'm just trying to judge it independent of the Hanley thing. Him as a player, is he this good? And my answer is no.
Sonia in Florida, go. Sonia!
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead, Sonia.
Okay. I have a couple of things to say to you guys. One of them has to do with you praising LeBron, saying how LeBron James is such a great guy. He's the best player in the world and all that. And that is what has him cocky. That is what makes LeBron the way he is. And then on top of that, I'm done with LeBron, but I'm going to the Red Sox. I think that the two games that they played, that they won in Houston, was huge.
I agree, Sonia. I agree, Sonia. They showed you something there, right?
That's right. They showed us something. And I think that the Red Sox are doing a very good job. I live in Florida, and I don't miss a game, and I love my Red Sox. So go Red Sox, and they're going to do it this year.
Okay, girl. Thanks for calling us. We appreciate it. Call anytime.
No, but what'd she get against LeBron?
She says that because we keep saying he's so good, that's the reason he's cocky.
Just us in particular.
people in general. I thought it was a good call. Here's Murray's update.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Green pass too low, but Curry recovers. Shot clock winding down. Curry's going to have to put it up. Launches it up. Shot clock. Oh, he knocks it down. Steph Curry with the shot clock expiring.
Steph Curry handling, recognized the clock is dwindling down. It actually looked beautiful in the air. My goodness, mama, there goes that man.
All right. Am I an a-hole if I think Steph Curry's overrated?
No.
Yeah, I mean, he might be the best shooter of all time. I mean, it's okay to say that, even if you don't like how he acts and you think he's too much of a cocky dink.
What are his percentages?
A career?
I mean, are his percentages, would they say, would, and again, I'm totally asking. I don't know.
I mean, he's a 40-plus percentage shooter from three. It's even higher than that. I'll give you the exact number. And then he's basically 90 from the line.
Okay, I don't care about the line.
He's one of the great shooters of all time.
Percentage-wise?
But so was Ray Allen, and I thought he was overrated.
Statistically, percentage-wise, he is.
I think that's absolutely yes.
Steph Curry took 26 shots last night.
Right.
He was 11 of 26. He was 11 of 26.
Career 43.6 from three. That's high.
Is that the best ever in the NBA? Like, I mean,
I just know for me, I've never seen anyone make it look that effortless from the perimeter. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Am I an a-hole to think that when I watch the games and I see Klay Thompson square up for a shot, that it has a better chance of going in than when Steph Curry shoots? I like Klay Thompson better.
Well, they're different.
Because of the size?
Maybe it's a size thing. Maybe it's Klay Thompson's sort of release. Like, I think, I don't know.
Well, they sort of go hand in hand.
I mean, Klay Thompson is like textbook rock solid release, square to the brim, all that. Steph Curry's sort of junk ball, like, you know, jiving here, jiving there, flicking it up. Like, I don't know.
I think it's too much flash for you.
It's flash. Like, I'm not a flash guy.
Flash guy, and you're kind of a sizist. I think that's what it is.
But Steph, I mean, 11 to 26. So, I mean, that doesn't feel very efficient.
Okay, but again, that's last night. Like, not just, you know, we're not judging his whole career on one night, are we?
No.
I mean, I just looked it up on Basketball Reference. Based on percentage, he's the fourth best 3-point shooter of all time.
Give me 1, 2, 3. Was Bird higher?
No. Different era.
Right. So wait, they took less, but I thought Bird might have made more. But either way.
Steve Kerr is number one. Steve Kerr is number one. Hubert Davis is second. Drazen Petrovic is third. And then Steph Curry.
Well, I'm sorry. That ain't much of a list.
No, it isn't.
That list does not impress me.
But again, if you were to focus on guys who have played in the last, call it, I don't know, 20 years, because the game has changed so much, he's basically the best shooter in the modern era.
I don't like him. You don't like Andrew Benintendi? I don't like Steph Curry. I think too cool for school. They have a cocky attitude.
Yeah, so that part I get.
Too much.
But when he's on like he is last night, and again, it's the 9 threes ultimately. Like, it doesn't matter.
11 of 26.
When he's hot like that, it doesn't matter. If you get close, he's just going to come back right. He comes right back down. It's like, oh, God, there goes the game again. Like, you just, some nights like that, you have no shot when he's on like that. I've never seen anyone like him. I really haven't.
Nah.
So to me, they've lost, you know, they've lost some of their luster since that first year. That first year, I loved them like everybody did.
Oh, I find them annoying and soulless. Like, I'm tired of this style of basketball.
Well, but it's like, to me, it's the Durant decision is when they lost me.
Sure.
It's like, well, now none of you got any pressure. You, Steph, can go dance around at the three-point line and launch and go 11 to 46 if you want. It doesn't matter because Durant's going to come down and work the mid-range game, and Durant was 10 of 14 last night. So like, you get to swing free and easy. And Durant, you have zero pressure. You're surrounded by gunners all around you that if you're having an off night, someone else is going to pick you up. And you don't even have to do the dirty work because Draymond Green is there to do the dirty work. So what are you really doing? It's like there's 0 degree of difficulty with those guys and all the pressure's off. And it just, like, it doesn't impress me. I'm so much more impressed with what LeBron has done, even in defeat in this round, than what those guys in Golden State are doing.
Well, LeBron's a better player than all those guys.
I mean, all the way around. All the way around. LeBron doesn't do it. It ain't happening. Steph Curry doesn't do it. Someone else will do it. And if Durant doesn't do it, someone else will do it. And they all know it. And so it allows you, it's just this freedom, like this lack of pressure. It's just, I'm not into that Golden State.
So look, just remember this. The year that they won without Durant, Andre Iguodala was the MVP of the finals.
And Kyrie Irving got hurt.
Right.
And so when it was just Steph and Klay, they couldn't beat LeBron. Had him 3-1, too, with two of the three at home, and they couldn't close. So you all needed Durant to come in there. And Durant, I don't want to hear from you either, because you had him 3-2 when you were in OKC, and you couldn't get it done, so you just joined him. Like, the whole lot of you can have each other. I like Klay Thompson the best of all of them.
And in that series, they imploded mentally, too. Remember Steph Curry with throwing the mouthpiece? Yes. Draymond Green kicking LeBron in the jimmy? Like, there was a big mental meltdown there in that series. They can be pushed. It's just, you know, unfortunately, the Cavaliers just don't have enough talent to do it. It's LeBron, Kevin Love, and bums.
Yeah. The year they won, again, Curry didn't have a great finals that year. Iguodala was the MVP. So, you know, he's a terrific player.
Give me Steph Curry's postseason percentages and where they rank.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I watch. It's the only time I watch. I mean, I admit it. But I feel like I flip on a lot of Golden State games, and he's just chucking threes. Dancing around, and dribbled, dipsy-doo, dribble-a-roo, and like, oh, his great handle, and step-backs, and like, but I don't know. I feel like he's missing a lot.
I just like the crowd shots of the mom.
Yo, she's a lovely lady. Lovely.
Thrown in the high 90s.
41% career from three in the postseason.
That's good. It's really good.
Yeah, it's still pretty good.
All right. Fine. So back to the phones. We have NBA Finals. We got Patriots. We have Red Sox. Here's Jules in New Hampshire for me. Yes, Jules.
Yeah, what's up, Mike? You finally did it. You know, you got these guys calling up, calling Tom Brady a fraud. You did it. I mean,
you're welcome.
This guy, he calls up to agree with you. I don't need to hear Mike's opinion twice. Another thing, Mike, you said that Brady doesn't miss games. He hasn't missed time before. This is his first year he does it.
His first year he's missed his passing camps, correct.
Right, passing camp. But he did miss a quarter of the season and then went on to win the Super Bowl, right?
Yes, that's correct. The regular season, yes, not the offseason.
So, I mean, yeah, first month of the season. What do the Pats do the first month of the season?
Jules, don't quiz me. Just tell me your take.
They change their whole game up. You always talk about that. They kind of feel it out, and by the fourth, fifth game, they're rolling. Brady misses four games and comes and wins the Super Bowl.
Big difference.
Your argument that
2 years ago, Jules, he was 100% committed, all in there every single day they let him be. So the fact that he misses those four regular season games, to me, is less significant than this when he's just missed 2 months, when he's not all in.
Right. You can tell me with a straight face that you don't think that Tom Brady is committed 100% right now?
He's committed less than he has been in the past. So whatever that number is, you can put whatever percentage you want it. If he's been 100% committed in the past, then he's down. He's down from 100%. That's right. That's right. Absolutely, Jules.
Tom Brady is. You don't think he's in as good a shape right now as he would be last year?
I'm not talking about his shape. Has he put in the same amount of time with his team as he has in the past?
You're nitpicking, Mike.
That's not nitpicking. Has he put in the same amount of time with the team as he has in the past?
No.
So then he's less committed than he's been.
If he missed 4 games 2 years ago, that's more time than he just missed at that passing camp, is it not?
I told you, apples and oranges. And no, it's not. He's missed 7 weeks. That was 4, 3.5, really, because I think they had a Thursday night game in there. He missed 3.5 at that time. This is 7.
You're taking that screwdriver just to make me call. I swear to God.
You're welcome again, Jules. Thank you for the call. Anytime. He's less committed than he has been the last 4 years. The last 4 years, he attended 100% of the offseason workouts. 100%, according to Ben Volen. Every one. Now, he hasn't made a single one. I don't know on the commitment meter how you could say he's as committed. It's different. Maybe he'll play as well as he's ever played. That we don't know yet. But to this point, he's dialed back on the commitment. That is a fact. That is not an opinion.
How do you think Belichick feels about it, Jules?
Are you Jeff Howe again? With the, like, it's unclear how Belichick feels that his best player missed the first 2 months of offseason program.
Like, I don't even find this to be a stretch. I can't believe people would fight this. Brady's not going to these things. He's thumbing his nose at the coach, and the coach wants him there. Fact. Like, I don't even see where there's gray area there.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This offseason is going to be about my family, and they deserve it. There's more to think about than just me. And I think that's what you commit to when you have a family, and they commit a lot to me. You know, that obviously goes both ways. It's a big commitment. Sitting here, laying here 3 days after the year, getting my Achilles worked on my thumb, and you go, what are we doing this for? You know, what are we doing this for? Who are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? You got to have answers to those questions, and they have to be with a lot of conviction. You know, when you lose your conviction, then you probably should be doing something else.
For our previous caller there. That sound like a guy who's as committed as he was before? So, like, again, I don't mean to parse words on you, folks. I'm not saying he's not committed. I'm not saying that he doesn't care.
No, you're just comparing him to the standard that he has set throughout his career.
Compare him to himself. And compare him to himself in this past 4 years. These past 4 years, he's been a maniac, folks. Like, he's been a maniac, even more than he was the 4 years prior. He's been a maniac. And God love him. God bless him. And don't you think that that's how he got to where he got to? I mean, his career arc was beginning to just tick down. It was not a collapse. He did not fall off a cliff, but the numbers were going down. The Super Bowl wins had dried up. And, well, they draft the next guy, and the next thing you know, he is at every practice. He's never looked better. He has his the best four-year stretch of his career was just now. From 36 to 40, or 37 to 40, however you parse that out. So, I think it's related to what he did. Off season, off the field, his whole mindset, his whole approach, he doubled down, went all in, all those cliches.
He rededicated himself.
Which is great. It's a great story. Like, that he, to do it at that age and succeed how he succeeded is just, what a great story. Don't you feel it's a little different now?
Of course it's different. And again, look, I don't even... You know, to me, you don't have to apologize for saying he started to slip there. He did. 3 years in a row. Completion percentage and rating went down. Fact. 3 years in a row. Belichick drafted Garoppolo. All of a sudden, Tom rededicated himself. So again, he had a threat. There was a threat that the end was near, or that someone perceived his end to be near, Belichick. And Brady said, I'm not going to let it happen. Now, to its credit, he responded.
And tremendously. Like, we've never seen anyone respond. But now he gets to the end of this year and says, you got a question. You just heard it. He wasn't saying that thing in the previous 4 years. And you say, well, you just had a tough loss. They've had tough losses. They don't win it every year. They lost 3 of the previous 4 years. Meaning at some point, there was a big loss in the AFC title game or the Super Bowl. And he didn't do that. But he did it this year. So, I don't know. He's just to say he's not as committed is really not, that's not, That's not a flamethrower. That's not a hot take. You don't need to call the hot take police on that. How about the fact, so here's the next 3 days. Gain media availability each of the next 3 days. Cameras out there the next 3 days. Belichick meets the media all 3 days. And I want him asked the same questions all 3 days, hopefully. Is Brady going to talk? I don't think he has to. I don't think the players are compelled to talk. This isn't like a regular season thing where they have to talk once a week or Super Bowl week where they have to be put out there. I don't think in the offseason these guys have to speak. And if I remember right, Brady did not speak last year. Maybe someone can correct me on that. Don't you think he should?
Yes, I do. I said this to you at the beginning of the program.
I mean, those are like the last, you know, well, not the last, but he's given some exclusive interviews, Jim Gray and whatnot. I guess he's doing something with Oprah here coming up, which I'll get to in a second. But after dropping all those hints and letting his wife speak for him and really entertain the thought of going year to year and not being in it long term and questioning why do we do that and all the things that he's floated out there, don't you think he needs to have just a little bit of a clear the air sort of thing?
Yes, I think that he owes some people an explanation. He owes fans an explanation. And look, I'm not saying, you know, the fan response to that is going to be he doesn't owe me anything, right? But I think he does. I think that he owes everybody some sort of explanation as to where he is mentally, why he elected to skip the workouts, what's going on with the contract, because your agent's saying this, like all of that stuff. To me, Brady should be given some answers here.
So here's from the Globe. Brady is about to be Oprah'd. The Patriots quarterback recently sat down with Oprah Winfrey as part of her Oprah Soul Super Soul Conversations. It's a podcast called Oprah's Super Soul Conversations. Brady recently sat down with Oprah and dished on his longevity, legacy, and life after football. The segment with the five-time Super Bowl champ will debut on the Oprah Winfrey Network June 17 and on the podcast the next day. Word is Brady does discuss Deflategate and, of course, his book, The TB12 Method, but we don't know if Winfrey had the courage or the common sense to ask the quarterback about his complicated relationship with Bill Belichick. In addition to Brady, others featured on Oprah's podcast this season include Grammy winner Will.i.am of what band, Maz?
No clue.
Oh, who the hell is it? Boom, boom, boom. Give it a boom, boom, boom. Why can't I remember? Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, God. I'm shocked you had to search for that, Murray.
Well, they're terrible.
Also, TV journalist and author Maria Shriver and Mitch Landrieu. Landrieu?
He's the mayor of New Orleans.
Sorry. So, like, I know who Will.i.am is, but not Mitch Landrieu. Isn't that horrible? The sit-down with Oprah is in keeping with Brady's effort to carefully curate his brand. The future Hall of Famer doesn't do a lot of interviews and rarely, if ever, with local media, preferring instead to talk to adoring outlets like The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and his own Facebook DocuWatch series, Tom vs. Time.
Right.
Or Facebook Watch DocuSeries. Interestingly, the Globe says, Brady has been in regular contact with New York Times reporter Mark Leibovich, who spent the last 4 years working on a book that promises to take a closer look at the NFL and at the Patriots quarterback in particular, than anyone's done before. Leibovich's book, entitled Big Game, The NFL in Dangerous Times, comes out September 4th, just in time for the NFL season. So that's interesting. What do you think Leibovich is up to? Big Game, The NFL in Dangerous Times. Is that a concussion thing?
Feels like it. Maybe he wanted to talk to Brady after Giselle said he had all the concussions. Who the hell knows? Feels like that's a concussion book, though, doesn't it?
We'll see. So I guess Brady's involved in that one.
Oprah thing is just...
How much did Oprah pay for that interview?
I don't know. Maybe nothing. It's just a good promo vehicle for
Doesn't what you listed, though, feel like that if you have the money, you can get Brady? So let's pool our money together as the Felger and Maz show and see what the cost would be to get Brady on the show.
So look, the Milken thing had to have been. Okay, he's not schlepping out there and, you know, the Michael Milken thing, he had to have been paid. Oprah? She reaches billions of people. If he wants to sell a book, like, that's a place to go to get a free commercial.
Sure.
So I don't know if she has to pay.
Well, look, I wonder, too, you know, and that thing that he did with Jim Gray at the Milken Institute, you remember he was, like, reluctant to say that he had dinner with Oprah? You remember that? Like, he was embarrassed by it almost. So, look, he's just, this is him hobnobbing with the greats.
So he may not talk this week to the local media. He didn't talk at his best buddies thing, which bothers me even more, by the way. But he'll sit down with Oprah and at the Michael Milken Institute and all that. Does that bother you, Miss?
Yes, it does bother me. Because, again, it's just a further attempt of Brady to hide. It's because he knows that if he actually has to answer questions from the football people for any length of time, that they're going to ask him questions that he doesn't want to answer, and it'll make him uncomfortable. So what does he do? He sets up some cushy landing with Oprah, which he can ask him about his wife and what he puts in the smoothies in the morning and all the other stuff that goes along with that. And she knows her audience doesn't really care about whether or not he's spatting with Bill Belichick. Like, to me, look, I'm sorry. I grew up in an era where you wanted the bad and the good with the people who played for the teams. Like, that's what you wanted to hear from them. You felt like they owed you an explanation. Because that was sort of their responsibility on some level, too. And I say responsibility, you know what I mean. Just these are the people, ultimately, who are watching you play every week. If you are or are not showing up, I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. Is that so outrageous?
There's just something about sitting with Oprah, but not giving the guys down here, you know, 10 minutes after practice. That's just, like, why? Do you think you're being treated unfairly here, Tom? I mean, like, this show gets on you. Maybe others, talk radio, like, there's always going to be someone here or there, but on balance, how do you think you've been treated here? I mean, you're deified. You're treated like a god here. And most of the media treats you that way as well. I mean, has Brady been mistreated?
I mean, you're talking to the wrong guy,
if
right?
If you don't want to come on Felger and Maz, that I get, okay? I'm not asking to come on Felger and Maz, but to just do the availability when he'll sit down with the Prince of Morocco and the Michael Milken Institute and Oprah, but he won't give, you know, Ben Volen and Phil Perry and Karen Garigian 10 minutes. I don't know. It's just like, I know all these guys, you know, if you get big enough, you eventually go to the national coverage, like that sort of standard, but good Lord. I mean, David Ortiz still spoke to the guys every day in the locker room. He was still, like, I don't know. There's just something about that. And it bothers me even more that he doesn't talk at the best buddies thing. Because it's like, Tom, you know how much more interest you draw in that thing? Like, I forgot it was even happening. Because the media treats it as sort of a non-event now because they know that Brady won't let you get within 100 yards of him and he won't talk. And so, like, so what are we here for? To take a picture of Gus Fieri? Guy Fieri? Whatever?
Guy Fieri.
take a picture of Teddy Bruschi? I don't need that. So it's like, but if Brady spoke and, like, really put himself out there for that best buddies thing, it would be hugely covered, especially in the last couple of years where there's all this controversy around him. And he could, you know, really generate a lot more buzz for the charity. Because it's not about you, and even though we're going to ask you questions, it's still, you're putting yourself out there for the greater cause. It's like, just do it. I don't know. Gronkowski did a charity thing yesterday. He spoke. Gronkowski took questions at his thing. So, like, I don't know. It's not the biggest deal. It's not a big deal at all. It's just another thing I go, really? Like, come on, man. Like, you've fallen that, like, you've separated yourself that much? You would take a few questions from Burton at the best buddies thing? Like, is it really that big of a deal to you?
Look, again, I don't, and I'm not saying it's apples to apples. I don't love it when the coach doesn't give an answer about why Malcolm Butler didn't play in the Super Bowl. I don't love that.
But he'll sit down with Oprah.
Yeah, no, it'll be a hard-hitting interview, and she'll get to all the core stuff that's going on.
So who knows? Maybe Brady will speak this week. I hope he does. He's got 3 days to do it.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub.